The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order. When we have a quorum, we're not quite there yet. We have two bills before us. They're somewhat similar, House File 9 and House File 213, Lewick and Lomer bills. And so we'll have both of you there to present your bills. And then we'll ask if there's anyone wishes to support the bills with concerns, and we will go to the department. We'll start. We only have one bill before the time. Representative Metza will move House File 9 when we have a quorum. And before we get going here, I was remiss on we missed one introduction yesterday, and that was Leanne Schultz from House Information. So if you could please just let us know how many parades you have in your town. Fire muster?
Don't ask me what it
is. What is a fire muster? Okay, well, we're glad you're here. We're glad you're here.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, yesterday I went second, so I followed the instruction that to talk only about parades. But when we got near the end on the other side, a couple of them brought up the fact that they had festivals. And I could have answered that question quite differently because the Robbinsdale Whiz Bang is no longer in my district with redistricting, but I still have the Crystal Frolics and the New Hope Duck Days. But neither one of them has a parade attached.
The New Hope what?
Duck, D-U-K, D-U-K, Duck.
Gray Duck?
I have no idea where that comes from. They've had it for many, many years, but it's about a 4 or 5 day festival.
Wow. But okay. When we have a quorum, Representative Metza will move House File 9, and then we can also talk about 2013. So if Representative Lomer's talking, it's probably about 2013. If Representative Lewis is talking, it's about House File 9. But we will sort all these things out. So with that, welcome to the committee. Representative Luke, if you could please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 9 would exempt the Social Security state income tax on Social Security retirement benefits, and it would do it over a five-year period, essentially the same bill that I proposed last session. Question is obviously why. We've got a significant and growing elderly population. If you look at Social Security cost of living index from the federal government, it doesn't exist. There's literally every penny that they see on an increase is taken up by a Medicaid increase, so that's essentially stagnant. There'll be a lot of other folks here, Mr. Chair, that I think will provide insights into both why and also the cost, because it certainly is not revenue neutral. With that, I believe in brevity, so I'll just get out of the way, Chair, and back here again, and thank you and members for your indulgence.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. We do have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Schultz moves the minutes of January 17, 2017. Any discussion? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, item next, Representative Metza moves House File 9 that will be laid over for possible inclusion. What the motion will be. Thank you, Representative Metza. And so did you have some folks that wish to testify on behalf of the bill?
Yes, I believe so, and I believe Representative Lomer does both ARP, and I know the Department of Revenue, so at least two. And obviously your call, Mr. Chair, as to whether you want to wait and have them talk to both or individual bills.
Thank you, Representative Luke. I think what we'll do is we'll have Representative Lomer go over her bill and then maybe point out some differences.
Yeah.
So if you could please present your bill, it's not before us at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for hearing House File 213 today. So this is a bill that I've carried every session that I've been here, so three sessions so far, and I'm offering it again with the hopes of passage and signing by the governor. And I would say that this is the issue that I hear most about from my constituents and really from people all over the state that are continuing to seek relief from this tax on their Social Security benefits. I believe we're only one of seven states in the country that taxes these benefits and one of the major factors for people leaving Minnesota in their retirement years. This is very unfortunate since these people have been productive and valuable citizens of Minnesota and they leave behind children, grandchildren, neighbors, and friends. And the difference between my bill and Representative Bluick's bill is a 10-year versus a 5-year phase-in. So every year since 2001, Minnesota has lost more people to other states than it has gained. So the net loss in every year since 2001 has been between 7,000 and 12,000 people a year. Minnesota is losing approximately 2,200 adults aged 60 to 69 a year. And since 2010, Minnesota has been one of the worst states for losing citizens to other U.S. states in the nation, losing approximately 43,000 people a year while only gaining about 33,000. So this information all came from the Minnesota government website in a report called Minnesotans on the Move. So I think it's an unfortunate thing that we get fiscal notes on bills that focus on lost revenue, but we never, if we don't collect the taxes, but we never look at the true costs associated with these same people leaving Minnesota. So between 1995 and 2007, the total amount of income leaving Minnesota was at least $3,698,692,000. Had this income stayed in Minnesota, state and local governments would have collected an estimated $423 million in additional taxes. So, and then keep in mind, too, when someone leaves Minnesota, state and local governments don't just lose income for 1 year, but for all the future years as well. So I'm very happy that this bill has bipartisan authors, and I ask members for your support.
Thank you very much. I see on 213, and we have nine House File 9 before us, the Metza motion, but we're going to kind of, I hope you can give me a little bit of liberty, committee, to kind of look at both of these. I think it's if you just look at the overview, Lewick's bill is a 5-year phase out, and 2013 Lomer's bill is over 10 years. So with that, we have someone who'd like to testify, Barbara Linert, or Linert.
Yes, sir.
Representative Letch.
Are we doing questions at the end, or are we spitballing?
I think we'll hear from Ms. Linert, okay. And then we'll go to Nan Madden, Will Phillips, and then we'll want to hear from the department. I think we'll get into member questions. We
thank you,
testimony on the books, and then we'll go from there, and there will be time for questions. Please state your name if you represent for the record, please.
Yes, good morning, Chairman. My name is Barbara Linert. I live in Eagan, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
I'm here to speak in support of Representative Lomer's bill to stop taxing Social Security benefits. My husband Archie and I are approaching retirement, and we have been talking with our financial advisor about the affordability of continuing to live in Minnesota. Should we stay, and should Social Security benefits continue to be taxed, we would pay upwards of $50,000 in taxes in this state, depending on how long we live, of course. We don't want to move out of this state. Archie and I were both born here. We started a business here. We raised our three children here. And we don't want to leave. We've lived in this same house in Eagan for over 30 years. But we have to look at financial reality. Our retirement nest egg will simply last longer if we move to another state. And we frankly have better things to do with $50,000 than to turn it over to the Minnesota tax coffers. For instance, we have set up a trust fund for our granddaughter, who is a special needs child. She will require very expensive and very specialized care her entire life, well beyond what we will live, well beyond what her parents will live, and well beyond what insurance and government programs can provide for her. We would rather see any extra tax money going into that trust fund. When we retire, you will not collect any tax on our Social Security benefits. We will move if we have to. We will pay sales taxes in another state as well. And we will pay property taxes in another state. It will not come to Minnesota. In addition, Minnesota's economy will not benefit from our continuing to spend our money here. Should we live into our 90s, we would expect to spend over $1 million simply on housing, utilities, food, and clothing. I'd rather spend the money here and stay close to my friends and family. That's the bulk of my testimony, but I do want to add one more thing. I testified before this committee on a similar bill 2 years ago. At that time, one of your committee members, Representative Ron Earhart, a Democrat, responded to my testimony by saying, senior citizens' medical costs are a drain on Minnesota, and that he would encourage senior citizens to leave. His exact words were, get rid of them. I would be interested to know if there are any other demographic groups that any members of this committee would encourage to leave Minnesota because they are a drain on our resources. If that is an argument any of the members here today will be using to vote against this bill, then I will say, shame on you. If that is your view of the senior citizens in this state, then I will say, shame on you. Thank you for my opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. I can identify one demographic group that's been asked to leave quite often, me. But that's I'm a demographic group.
300 pounds, I can be a demographic group, I would think.
Okay, so that being said, thank you for your testimony. We'll get the testimony on the books. If you could please stick around, Ms. Leonard, in case there's questions for members. So let's go to Ms. Nan Madden from the Minnesota Budget Project. She is the director of Minnesota Budget Project, Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. And then Mr. Will Phillips, State Director of AARP, if you could join us, please, at the table. And then just to see where we're at, is there anyone from the audience, other than the department here, anyone from the audience that wishes to testify with concerns? Okay, we have someone. Anybody else? Okay, we will. You'll be up next. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today with some concerns about the scope of the bills you have before you related to the expanding the state's income tax exemption for Social Security income. Minnesota currently takes a targeted approach to the taxation of Social Security benefits that follows federal parameters. For the lowest income seniors, none of the Social Security benefits are subject to tax, and the amount of Social Security subject to tax does grow with income, with the highest income seniors having 85% of their Social Security subject to tax. The primary concerns we have are, first of all, the high cost of these bills, given demographic trends, can crowd out other priorities and put services that seniors count on at risk, that the tax benefits aren't well targeted. And then we are also concerned about the use of phase-ins, which we don't think is good fiscal practice. So first of all, the concern with the high cost of bills, which hits more than $550 million a year when fully phased in, and that cost will only grow further with demographic trends. As seniors make up a rapidly growing share of the state's population, the cost of the tax cuts will grow over time, reducing resources available at the same time that the number of seniors needing services will grow, whether those be community-based services that allow seniors to stay in their homes, transit services, or high-quality nursing home care. The most struggling seniors would be the hardest hit because those seniors receive no benefit from these bills' tax cuts because their Social Security is already exempt, but they would feel the greatest impact of cutbacks in services. Another concern is that these bills have long phase-in periods, which puts off the discussion of how the ultimate cost of these tax cuts will be ultimately paid for, whether that's cuts in services or higher taxes on others. We think it is risky to commit the state to additional future tax cuts on top of what's shown in the four-year forecasting window because we do not know what the state's financial situation will be over the 5 to 10 years that they take to go fully into effect. We don't think it is wise to assume that Minnesota will be in a good position to fund new tax cuts every year for the next 5 to 10 years. A recession does tend to hit roughly every 10 years. The current economic recovery is already long by historical standards, so it would not be surprising for economic downturn to hit while these tax cuts are still phasing in. These bills cut taxes more each and every year, even if we face a recession and a potential state budget deficit. We don't think it makes sense to cut taxes when you have a deficit, and that would make it harder to meet the needs of Minnesota residents, including our seniors, in the next recession. There has been a lot of discussion in this committee already this session about the influence of tax policy on people's decisions to move and the economic impact of what movement does occur. We think when we look at the literature, the impact of that has been overstated. That's certainly not to say that no one ever moves or that tax policy is never part of the equation, but the academic research that looks at a 30-year period found that tax policies, including tax policies for seniors, are not a strong driver of decisions to move. Patterns of migration by seniors in the U.S. have been fairly steady over time, even as state tax policies have changed over time and between states. It also, this research doesn't suggest that cutting taxes on seniors would pay for themselves, that the additional revenues gained from changing the behavior of a small number of households from moving is much less than the revenue loss from the tax cut. You certainly have heard compelling stories about the concerns of seniors, and I'm sure you'll hear more. I would encourage you to take a more targeted approach to the needs of Minnesota seniors than these bills that looks both at the tax and the public services side of the equation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. Mr. Phillips, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes, Will Phillips. I'm the state director for AARP Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. It's good to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on House File 9 and House File 213. AARP represents more than 660,000 Minnesotans, and we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that works across Minnesota to strengthen communities and advocate for the issues that matter most to families, such as health care, employment and income security, retirement planning, affordable utilities, and protection from financial abuse. I want to start by saying that AARP would like to thank Representative Lueck and Lomer for bringing these bills forward. And Chairman Davids, we also want to thank you for hearing these bills today and for introducing your own legislation, House File 4, to address this important issue. AARP does support efforts to reduce the tax burden on Social Security benefits. And when you are retired, we know from lots of stories from members and others that cost of living adjustments, when they happen at all, are small and oftentimes don't keep up with increases in health care and other necessary consumer goods and services. As you know, Social Security exemption levels have not been adjusted for more than 30 years, meaning that each year more and more low- to middle-income Minnesotans are paying taxes on their benefits. In fact, the number of Minnesotans who are paying taxes on Social Security benefits has more than doubled over the years, from about 160,000 in 1998 to more than 354,000 in 2013. As a result, the amount of Social Security benefits included as taxable income has quadrupled. So based on these figures, it's clear to us that we are taxing seniors to a higher level than was originally intended. So how should we address the problem? Representative Lueck and Lomer have proposed phasing out the tax on Social Security completely, with House File 9 phasing it out over 5 years and House File 213 doing so over 10 years. However, AARP would urge lawmakers to consider a more targeted approach which would lower the tax burden on Social Security benefits for Minnesotans, low- and middle-income earners. This could be done by adjusting for inflation the current Social Security tax exemption levels that are in law today. Under this approach, the new exemption level would be adjusted to reflect today's dollars, raising it from $25,000 to $54,000 for single filers and $70,000 for couples. Now, it's important to note that when Social Security benefits became taxable in 1984, the median income in Minnesota was little more than $24,000, $24,436. And that is a figure that is less than the exemption threshold of $25,000. Today's median income for a Minnesota taxpayer is $67,244, more than 2.5 times the taxation exemption threshold. So, Chairman Davids, we know that your bill, House File 4, takes a step in this direction, and we're pleased to see that. That approach of adjusting these tiers and indexing them to inflation is consistent with AARP policy that taxes should be equitable and should consider one's ability to pay. In addition, it's a more balanced approach and provides relief while producing revenue that will help sustain important programs that many Minnesotans rely on in times of need. So I want to thank you for your time today, particularly for raising up this important issue. AARP stands ready to work with legislators from both sides, from both parties, to make Social Security tax relief a reality for low- to middle-income seniors. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Madden and Mr. Phillips, if you could please stick around. We have one more person to testify. Then we're going to, well, two more people that I know of. If you could please join us, and then we'll go to the department. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on behalf of this bill one way or the other? Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Mary O'Connor. I'm from Brooklyn Center.
Welcome to the committee.
I recommend you eliminate excise taxes, the sales tax, the Social Security tax, and the state property tax. We can afford these cuts if we eliminate tax exemptions, credits, and refunds, like the property tax refund. We also would need to tax employee benefits. Some workers don't get employee benefits, so they pay taxes on all their income. It's only fair to tax employee benefits. We could also eliminate the estate tax if we fully tax dividends and capital gains. An additional way to pay for these tax cuts is to end aid to local governments. Also, corporate welfare should end. Then we can have fair and simple taxes.
Thank you. Did you have any comments on the bill before us?
Yes, please end Social Security taxes.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Cummings from the department. And then we'll go on to member questions. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Representatives Lohmer and Lewick, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I reached out to Representative Lewick's and Representative Lohmer's offices last night. I was able to connect with Representative Lohmer right before the hearing, and I'm sorry I was not able to connect with you in person, Representative Lewick. As we discuss this issue, I'd like to provide some context. All or a portion of a recipient's Social Security benefits may be excluded from taxable income. Social Security benefits are not taxable if the recipient's modified adjusted gross income is less than $25,000 for a single or $32,000 for married joint filers. For taxpayers with income between $32,000 and $44,000 for married joint, between $25,000 and $34,000 for single, up to 50% of the Social Security benefits are taxable. Above that income level, up to 85% of the benefits are taxable. Modified adjusted gross income is adjusted gross income plus federally tax-exempt interest plus one-half of Social Security benefits. In 1985, Minnesota adopted the federal treatment. The treatment of this was again modified federally in 1993 and adopted by Minnesota in 1994. In 2012, the last available year we have, only 32% of Social Security benefits received by Minnesotans were subject to Minnesota tax. Half of all Minnesota households, nearly half of all Minnesota households with Social Security income paid no tax on any of that income, Mr. Chair. That is because most of the Social Security recipients do not have enough income to get above the income levels, or as I explained earlier, at which a portion of the Social Security benefits become taxable. We already have a subtraction for elderly and the disabled as well. The cost of the full exemption on Social Security income would be over $1 billion in fiscal years 20 and 21. And with the increasing number of taxpayers receiving benefits due to the retirement of baby boomers, the cost will continue to increase greatly as time goes on. This proposed phase-in of the subtraction avoids showing the full cost, which must be kept in mind when discussing this proposal. Some have talked about the importance of the Social Security exemption. I, myself, have heard from teachers and police and nurses who are wondering about the taxability of their pension income. Pensions serve a very similar purpose to Social Security benefits and are taxable at the federal and state level. In tax year 2016, Minnesota brought in an estimated $635 million on taxes from pensions. That's about $1.3 billion over a two-year period. If the intention is to provide tax relief to seniors that need it, exempting all Social Security income currently subject to tax is a poorly targeted approach. Those with Social Security benefits with income below the state average paid tax on an average 1% of their Social Security income. Only 10% of the proposed benefit would go towards Minnesotans earning less than $50,000. Nearly 50% of the benefit would go to those with incomes over $100,000. This proposal does not benefit all seniors. It primarily benefits wealthy seniors. There are other tax benefits available to seniors that we want the committee to be aware of. Seniors have talked to us about taxes and their inability to pay rising property taxes on a fixed income. Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith recommends amending the Senior Citizen Property Tax Deferral Program to lower the owner occupancy requirements to 15 years to 5 years and to move the application date deadline from July 1st to October 1st. This would allow more Minnesotans to participate in the Senior Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program and makes it more affordable for them to stay in their homes. If these bills that were talked about today, Mr. Chair, move through the process, the department looks forward to continuing the conversation about the existing Social Security exemption in Minnesota law and working with the chair and staff. Thank you for the opportunity to be a resource.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. And, yes, you're testifying as a resource and nine on House File 9 and 213. When is the governor's tax bill going to be ready to go?
Chair Davids and members, the governor had made an announcement the first week of session about many of the proposals in his tax plan. The governor's budget will be released, I think it is next week, and then language will come out a little after that, Mr. Chair.
Are you aware, Mr. Cummings, of how the governor addresses the Social Security taxation issue? I think he had some stuff proposed.
Mr. Chair, I know that he had talked publicly about his openness to various ideas that have come up. I know that he's always had an openness to talking about these issues.
And, yes, I'd like the bill as soon as possible. We'll give it a full hearing here. And there's some good stuff in that bill, or his proposal that I've seen so far.
Oh, Mr. Chair, it's a very good proposal. There were some proposals that I know had been talked about in the House last year. There's some targeted relief to farmers. There's property tax relief for many Minnesotans in the bill. And then there's also many issues about fairness that are being addressed in the bill. So the governor put together a good package.
There's a few clinkers, but there's some good stuff in there, too. And we'll give it a full and fair hearing, as we always do. If you could just wait there, Mr. Cummings, we'll go to questions to the department first. And Mr. Phillips was referring, I think, to House File 4, where what we do is we raise the exemption amount. So we don't eliminate, we raise the exemption and include more of the maybe middle-income, lower-middle-income folks from exemption. So, okay, with that being said, we will go to questions. If anybody else wish to testify, we'll go to questions. Chair Anderson S.
Mr. Chair, my question is for Ms. Madden.
Excuse me?
My question is for Ms. Madden.
Okay, let's go. Okay, we'll get you first with Ms. Madden. Let's go for Mr. Cummings. First off, Lester, do you have anything for the department?
I don't think for the department at this time.
Okay, we'll come back to you. How about Grunhagen to the department?
Yes, Yeah, I could make a comment.
You don't have to.
I've been told that in the past, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Representative Cummings. Well, you represent the governor's office, I guess. So. But anyway, you might get our pay if I refer to you as representative, which would probably be a decrease for you, hopefully. Hey, thanks for what you do. And, you know, I just have to say this about the testimonies in general, is that, you know, first you said not many seniors are paying the Social Security tax, and then if I understood you correctly, you went on to say it would cost $1 billion in the next 2 or 3 years in lost tax revenue. Is that correct?
Mr. Cummings?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the full cost of the exemption on Social Security income would be over $1 billion
every
fiscal year, 2021. So it's about $500 million per year.
Representative Gruenhagen?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, you know, from my perspective, evidently some people are paying a lot of taxes with the Social Security, all right? If we're bringing in $500 million a year, so on the one hand we say not many are paying it, but on the other hand, $500 million is coming in. I see that as a little bit of a contradiction. Secondly, I strongly support easing the burden of costs and expenses for retiring senior citizens. And what I mean by that, I sell Medicare supplements. I've got about 300-350 people on Medicare. And I hear time and again from these seniors, I hope I die before my money runs out, okay? I mean, that's where they're at. Everywhere they turn, their costs are going up. And this is causing great distress and consternation in the senior community. Okay, which at a time where they should be enjoying their retirement. So the last thing I'd say, Mr. Cummings, is that for you to consider and the governor, is the MMB report in April of 2015. Okay, it's available. I have a copy in my car. I don't have one with me. But I've referenced it many times. Basically what that MMB report says is that when the gas price went down here in Minnesota from over $4 a gallon down to $2 a gallon, MMB's words, and I've just about got it memorized, okay, it was equivalent to a $2 billion tax cut for Minnesota families and businesses, okay? The report goes on to say, this allowed over $900 of additional income per family on average across the state. This in turn created additional economic activity, which resulted in higher tax revenues. In fact, we had about a $2 billion surplus. So when you reduce taxes, okay, and give people more money to spend, they generate more tax revenue. So the last thing you want to do in a recession, which was mentioned earlier, is to increase taxes. You should actually decrease taxes. These are economic laws that have been proven by John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, and numerous other individuals. And for us in government not to understand these basic economic principles of believing that you simply raise taxes and you're going to get more revenue, when human beings will do things to avoid paying those taxes, like moving out of the state, is hard for me to understand, quite frankly. I realize you are dedicated to your job. I'm not trying to undermine your thinking or credibility in any way, and maybe I misunderstand you, but the point is, when I hear these types of comments come from testifiers, it is extremely distressing to me when I want to see our state prosper and actually generate more tax revenues. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the beginning.
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gruenhagen, I thank you for that. I think that when we have discussions in this committee about how to change various policies, one of the things that we do have to consider are the impacts on the economy. And so, you know, as we talk about various tax preferences, about various ways who should pay taxes in order to meet our budget. We also should consider the economic impacts that would have if we were to cut health care for 10,000 Minnesotans, if we were to fail to protect drinking water, if we were to not invest in education, if we were to think about other ways in which we would have to divest in various situations. So what I'm trying to say is that I'm not disagreeing with you that the decisions that are made in this room do not have economic consequences, but that the decisions that are also made within the legislature have economic consequences as well. And we've got to balance those off against one another.
One short response, Mr. Chair.
Very short. Representative Ruth Hankins.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. My response would simply be the needs that you listed off, I agree, are very necessities in our state. And what I'm trying to get across to you, and maybe not very well, is by lowering taxes, you're actually going to get increased tax revenues to meet those needs. When you raise taxes and drive seniors who would spend money on sales tax, gas tax, and other things in our state out of the state, you lose that revenue. And we've had testimony to the amount of income that has left, partly because of those excessive burdensome taxes. So I agree with you 100%. Let's have higher revenues, but we do that through decreasing taxes in many areas, becoming competitive in those areas, and leaving more money in seniors' pockets. Thank you.
Does anybody have a question for the witness? Representative Mark Hort and Schultz. No. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings, for your testimony. Do you have with you information on how many more people would be exempt if we increased the exemption to 75,000? It was a bill introduced last session, I believe, 3847 by Representative Ansells.
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz, I don't have that information offhand. I'm not sure if that estimate exists, but that's certainly something, if we have language for that, our research division would be happy to put together some numbers on that.
I believe the answer is 261,500.
Additional individuals above the 32,000 exemption.
Yeah.
Is that in your bill, House File 4? It's in your head? Awesome. I have a comment, and I can make that now or later.
Be fine.
Okay, so Representative Grunhagen, I don't believe you're an economist, but we do have significant evidence from economists who looked at Kansas and other states that did lower their taxes, and they did not see benefits in terms of economic growth and additional revenue. And many of those states that lower taxes are struggling right now to balance their budget. So I don't, unless you can provide evidence that's, you know, research-based from economists that suggests that, I don't think we should discuss things that are inaccurate and misinform the public.
Mr. Chair, my name is mentioned.
She said his name. Representative Grunhagen, just freaky fast.
Okay. I'm trying to think how to say that freaky fast, but anyway, I will. Representative Schultz, appreciate you. I know you're in higher ed, but I would say that the majority of economists in this country condemned Ronald Reagan's they called it Reaganomics, and yet it grew revenues at a faster rate historically than at any time in our country's history and provided one of the longest prosperity times. Now, we did wind up with deficits because primarily the Congress wouldn't restrain spending. But I would say this. When you lower taxes, you do have to reform government and restrain its spending for 1 or 2 years so that the economy can actually grow and expand and generate more tax revenue. That's an economic fact and law, and I'd refer you to the Center for the American Experiment, the Cato Institute, and the Heritage Foundation, and you will find ample economic evidence to confirm that, along with Nobel Prize-winning economist Milton Friedman, who was ostracized and then proved to be right. Thank you.
Representative Schultz? Okay, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Cummings, you started off with your testimony with some statistics. Would you be able to get those statistics out to the committee and their sources? Just appreciate that.
I'd be happy to do that.
Representative Detmer? Okay. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Cummings. I have in front of me two revenue sheets here that talk about fiscal notes that talk about the cost of in 20 and 21 of about $700,000 for Representative Luke's bill and $360 million for Representative Loehmer's bill. But I think I heard you talk earlier that it was going to be about $1 billion over that biennium, which is a whole lot more than that. Am I correct that what you're really referring to is not the cost of these bills, but the overall cost of all of the taxes collected for Social Security?
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, yes. The full cost of the exemption on Social Security income would be over $1 billion in fiscal year 2021. I was not trying to put some dissonance between the revenue estimate from the Department of Revenue and what I was trying to say. I was trying to, you know, these are phased-in approaches. So what were to happen if it wasn't phased-in? That was what I was trying to represent in my testimony, to try and get the true cost of the exemption rather than what is the phased-in cost. Because the cost that you see on the revenue estimate is what it would be under the approaches, and one has a 10% phase-in per year and one has 20%. So you're really seeing just a portion of that amount within those planning years.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Cummings. You know, I have two questions. One, so are you saying that you're saying that these proposals benefit rich seniors? So you're saying a senior individual making a provisional income of $34,000 a year or joint filers at $44,000 a year are rich? Is that what the governor's telling us?
Mr. Cummings, what is the governor telling us?
Mr. Chair and Chair Drazkowski, I think the testimony that I provided was that nearly 50% of the benefit would go to those with incomes over $100,000. I know last year, as a proposal came in to talk about child care benefits at the $100,000 level, there was some criticism from this committee about having such a high benefit amount for that credit. You know, I think that was in trying to refer to where some of the benefit of this exemption would go. Having the exemption would not be targeted, and it would go to nearly 50% would go to those with incomes over $100,000.
Chair Drazkowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Cummings, I heard in your testimony either rich or wealthy or some other, class-dividing word, $34,000 and $44,000 is the upper tier on this. That's not rich, according to middle-class Minnesotans. That's probably at the lower end of the middle class, according to most people. So, I would encourage you and the governor to reconsider what this is going to do and how this is going to benefit people. But the most important question I have, Mr. Chair, relates to the way this is structured. And members, we heard this last biennium too, and I think the same two authors, and thank you both for bringing the bill. But as you look at this, it's structured in a way that provides inhibition or disincents people from working. So we have this big group of seniors out there that's going to get bigger. And if you're a senior and your provisional income is over $25,000 as a single filer, this is telling you don't work anymore because we're going to tax all of your stuff more. So, Mr. Cummings, do you want seniors to work? That's my question, because having a position against cutting this tax that disincents work tells me that you and the governor don't want seniors to work, but I would hope you wouldn't want them to become dependent on the government.
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, I don't want my comments to be misconstrued. I did state publicly here, and only echoing what the governor has said publicly, is that he is opening to talk about the various thresholds. And this type of exemption. So I don't want any of the types of information that I provided to be any sort of dissonance from the fact that there is certainly an openness to talking about this topic. We want to ensure that as the committee makes these decisions that they have the most information possible in order to do that. And I hope that that's what I'm able to provide here today as a resource, Mr. Chair.
Chair Grasshouse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Cummings. That's good to hear, and I appreciate that. And, you know, members, if we are going to strengthen our state and strengthen our country, we have to encourage work. This is a direct disincentive for people to work. People who are very capable, very productive, a great resource to our state and our country. And this flies right in the face of us getting to a point where we can grow our capabilities as a state and a country again. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Metza.
I'm going to take a pass just in terms of time, but we should take that one offline. And Representative Chair Grofflo can attest that I had my little rant last night. So if you want to listen to it on the tapes that are going to be on record 100 years from now, you can do so a little early.
Representative Metz, I really have no desire to do that. Let's have her talk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Cummins, my question is directed also at the fiscal analysis. I was reading in the analysis detail. I couldn't really determine the projections further out. I'm curious to know, with the projections, when you're going that far out, we have about, it's estimated to be about 10,000 baby boomers are retiring every day in this country. And so when you're looking out a few years ahead, 5 years, 2021, 2026, are you measuring the number of returns that are currently getting Social Security, or are you anticipating the additional returns and the growth in Social Security collections in future years?
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, I know this is a I'm going to try my best to answer these questions. I don't want to sort of supersede the knowledge of our research division. But, Mr. Chair, you know, in order to come up with the estimates, first they had to estimate the full cost of the exemption, and then, you know, and then they worked to try and phase that in over time. When they were trying to look at the projections, they did have to look at what was going on with income in our state, but also what was going on with retirement. So if you look at some of the estimates for the full cost of the exemption, you will see that in some estimates you'll see sort of a gradual growth that rises with inflation. That is a cost. But for this, they're really needing to factor in what is going on in terms of retirements in the state. So there is an increase that is larger because of the baby boomers that are retiring.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, then you confirmed what I was concerned with, because I think it's a little difficult to be talking about fiscal impact for money that we have not been collecting on a regular flat scale and to be predicting what future income we might be giving up. It's not money we have. So the real cost, if we're talking about suspending collecting Social Security, is only the cost currently being collected, not for future collections of people who are not yet on retirement. So I think it tends to lead one to believe that this is going to be more expensive than it really is. And it's hard to talk about spending money that we're not even collecting.
Any other questions for Mr. Cummings? Okay, thank you very much. Oh, let's bring Ned Madden up. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. And if you have questions, Mr. Cummings is very accessible and very helpful, so he will get your questions answered. Thank you, Ms. Madden. Now we're going to have questions for Ms. Madden. Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Madden, earlier in your testimony you talked about
that if we were to do this, it would be financially irresponsible for us to take these tax revenue off the table. Would you also argue that increasing spending would be irresponsible then as well?
Ms. Madden?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, thank you for that question. So I want to maybe go after that in two ways. One is that one of my concerns about this bill in particular is the way the costs grow over time, first of all, for demographic reasons and because of the phase-out. So I am not sure, I haven't done the math to figure out what that growth rate is year over year. If there was a spending proposal that had substantial demographic build-out, substantial growth rates over time, and kind of built that way, I think you'd want to take a close look at that also and see whether that's sustainable.
Chair Anderson asks.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Madden. I think that's the decision that we have to make all the time at the legislature, and that's been some of the concern on the spending side of things, that we are committing the state to spending that we don't know how much it's going to grow. And I just look at Minsure as a prime example. Here we've dumped $400 million into a project that isn't working at all. So just something, food for thought.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Ms. Madden, any follow-up?
Just to say that, you know, there are some things in this bill where we know the factors leading to growth, and I think we're just saying we need to look at always. We understand that your concerns need to be how do the revenue and spending sides match up. So also that we bring that into this conversation to be keeping in mind what will be the needs in terms of growing need for services for seniors as you're making your tax and budget decisions.
Chair Anderson asks. Any other questions for Ms. Madden? Just wait.
Oh, sorry.
For members.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Madden.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else, committee members, have questions for anyone else? Representative Lesh, and then we'll go to Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I had questions for the authors.
Oh, let's before we do that, you'll be first on the list for authors. Do we have any other questions of anybody else that testified? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, this is a clarification question for maybe Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi. And just the question is, how many other benefits that are given out by either the state or the federal government do we currently tax along with the Social Security? I mean, Social Security is a benefit that was collected and then now is paid back to the individuals, much like a lot of other things that we do. Are there other areas in which we tax benefits coming from government entities?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Petersburg, I don't think I can't think of another sort of social benefit program. I think some people would argue that government pensions for the variety of public employees, some of whom traditionally, for example, the old federal civil service plan that started to be phased out in 1983, was exempt from Social Security, and those employees got, you know, larger benefits to reflect that. And a bunch of state and local employees are also exempt from Social Security and get more generous pensions from the government to reflect that fact. And those pensions are fully taxable. That's the only analogy that I can think of. Most government benefit programs like health benefits and social service benefits and those sort of things are exempt under what's generally referred to as the general welfare exemption. That's not actually in statute, but is an old sort of IRS administrative procedure, and that was used initially to exempt Social Security benefits from taxation. And then starting in the early 80s, Congress sort of made the decision that that was probably not a wise thing because that program was so universal and generous that it really was more like income than a social welfare benefit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Michael. That's helpful to me, at least, because I was thinking that was kind of the same way. And I think we need to go back to understanding that Social Security is a tax that is collected for the good of everybody as a benefit that is returned for those that need it as a safety net. And it was, and it really, in my opinion, was not designed as a pension program. And so, therefore, it really is a tax that's collected and then spent, much like other social programs. And the idea that we would tax something that's already been taxed, or at least taxes, it does seem a little bit foreign to what we ought to be doing. And yeah. It was just a comment that I thought very interesting.
Okay, before we get to the authors, are there any other questions for Mr. Will Phillips, Barbara Leonard, or Ms. O'Connor? Okay, let's go to the or Representative Laughlin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that you know, as we're looking at fairness, and if we're going to seriously pursue this, I think people assume that everyone has paid into Social Security and will earn it, and that's just not been true for a long time. I think it's become more and more true with more employers, but as Mr. Michael mentioned, many public employees have been in pension plans that are not coordinated with Social Security, so they get no Social Security benefit. I think railroad retirement, and I know that at least when the city of Minneapolis had its pension plan for police and fire, they were contributing far more than what we contribute in Social Security. I think it was like 9 or 10% of their paycheck went into their pension plan. So they paid higher amounts in through their working time, but then when they retired, they didn't earn Social Security. So they get a pension that now they'll pay taxes on, or do pay taxes on, without getting this particular benefit. And I'm wondering if the authors or the advocates for this have thought about how to make this more equitable for all taxpayers, no matter what their particular retirement plan is, because they didn't have a choice. I mean, if you took a job with a particular employer, this was the way it was. And I know that public employees also have some kind of strange things, that if you get a public pension, you're not allowed to claim against your spouse's Social Security, even if that could be higher. So there's some really unique wrinkles in this. And I'm just wondering if we're going to pursue this, if the advocates are willing to dig in and, you know, try and make sure that it's an equal benefit for all retirees who are right now taxed, but they weren't treated equally in terms of the system when it was put together.
Is that a question?
That's the question of whether or not they think we should start looking at these broader issues.
Representative Lohmer?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Loeffler, for that question. I guess I would just say that our bills are addressing the Social Security issue, and I think that you know, any other ideas that other people have are more than welcome to work on. And so I wouldn't really, and maybe somebody from the AARP is working on something and wants to answer that question, but I'm not familiar with anything else that's happening right now, just working on this.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do think that since particularly first responders or police and fire were very likely to have a separate situation in which it was not coordinated with Social Security, I think we really need to think hard about, you know, what's the fair way if we were to move forward on this.
Thank you, Representative Lesh, and then Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for Representative Lohmer. Did you confer with Representative Hertas on your statistics regarding this tax causing people to flee the state?
Representative Lohmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative. No, I did not.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, Representative Lohmer, the reason I ask is because yesterday, Representative Hertzhaus claims that it was our resident definition that was causing people to leave the state. And today we hear that it's the Social Security tax. Earlier this year, it was the estate tax that was causing everyone to leave the state. And in previous years, the reason for the mass migration was the tax on military pensions, commercial industrial tax rate, corporate franchise tax, Minnesota income tax, and a myriad of others. And so my point is, I think you guys have more than a few pies. You got to get a flow chart or something
and agree amongst yourselves as to which percentage your bill is responsible for, which would shore up leaving the state. Because you're at about 580% now. You narrow it down to 100%, okay, somewhere. The reason why that's important, Mr. Chair, and the reason I bring this up, is because, as you know, and as former Chair Lincheski used to claim, that this is the only committee in the House that both raises and spends money. So every time you bring forth a bill that spends money on someone for their special interest tax cut, the rest of us pay for it. So that money comes from somewhere, unless you're subscribing to the Glenn Grunhagen School of Economics. And I still didn't get that, Representative Grunhagen. I felt like I was in a timeshare presentation for a second there.
Please don't mention his name.
Sorry, I won't. But
too late.
But I think I honestly think, Mr. Chair, that when it comes down to which is why I, and the testifiers both Mr. Cummings and Ms. Madden were very clear in saying, listen, if you put this money towards something, you gotta pay for it in some other way. And notwithstanding the claims that, hang on a second, we don't pay for it because the people who are leaving the state wouldn't otherwise leave the state and then we'd have the money again, that's when you start to get into that voodoo economics and makes me nervous. So thank God for the experts on this, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lincheski's name was mentioned. Would you like to come down and testify? Okay, let's go to Representative Marquardt.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't have a question, but I just want some comments. Are we to that point? Would that
be
okay?
We'll let you wrap things up.
Okay.
Other questions? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And we've had great discussion about fairness and equity here, and I just want to, again, bring back to the idea that pensions, we oftentimes think of Social Security as a pension, and so therefore think that it's appropriate to say they need to be treated fairly and equitably between the two. But we got to remember basically this. Social Security is collected by the federal government, controlled and maintained by the federal government, and distributed according to what the federal government wants. A pension is indifferent. No matter how you get the pension, once you're vested, you own it. My late wife died at 58. She paid Social Security all of her life. You know what I received as benefit for that, her heirs? $200 for funeral expenses. That's much different than what a pension plan is, where the heirs and the estate get all of it. So we gotta remember that Social Security is not a pension. And to say that we need to compare it so it's equitably treated like pensions doesn't make sense because it's never going to be treated that way, at least not currently. So we have to just understand that Social Security is a tax and a government entity. Pensions are owned by the person who is creating the pension and who owns the pension. It's just very, very specific.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if I want to direct this. I guess I'll direct it to either the authors or if Ms. Madden wants to come back. I was noting in the paper recently a discussion or an article about the rising incidence of senior citizens, people 65 and over, on food stamps. Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting point of discussion for this because I know with the recession happening, there were a lot of people whose retirement funds were close to retirement, largely disappeared if they had money perhaps in the markets or their funds were substantially lower than they were. And, just in the manner of discussing maybe some really worthy things that we may entertain funding through the tax code or other things, how our demographics are looking right now, because I know we weigh it against maybe from a generational standpoint, assistance to families with young children, dependent care credit, which I'm a big supporter of, as I have also supported these proposals. But do we know kind of what the status is of some of our senior citizens? And a lot of them I know have seen a decline in their retirement income and sort of their stability in their retirement years for some things. And as property taxes and other expenditures rise, they're seeing their resources squeezed.
For example?
Thank you for the question. It's really pretty basic. And the reason I focus on Social Security and really phasing this out is literally everything else that a senior faces as far as costs is either stagnant or they're going backwards. It's just that basic. That's what drives things like more and more seniors are eligible for food stamps. We raised the eligibility over the last few years for people that are able to use that resource. We're not keeping up on that whole broad spectrum with seniors. And again, we've heard a robust and fascinating discussion on the pros and cons of treating our seniors better from a financial standpoint. But I'm just talking from what I hear Sunday after Sunday after church, talking to folks that are a little older than I am. Some for financial reasons, they've left the state. They're here, but they move for tax purposes. Their estates and everything else out of the state. Some are sitting there hoping somebody can give them a ride to church because they don't want to spend the gas. We are just simply, stranger in tax committee here advocating for seniors. I am. We've got robust committees for for education. We've got robust committees for health and human services. It's just a straightforward answer to that question is everything else is stagnant or going backwards for these people. And you know what? If we spend a lot of time here, continue to jaw on this for another couple of sessions, there's a whole other crop of them are going to die before we actually provide any relief. That's the other thing that kind of intrigues me is that we've got time to debate in a robust manner. The clock is ticking for that particular group in our population. So pretty basic answer, it's all of it. And this is one situation where we can have a direct and immediate impact, and that's why I advocated for a five-year phase-out. And certainly, if I can't have a five-year, I'll go with a 10-year. but it's across the board.
Carolyn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't know if Representative Lomer or if Ms. Madden wanted to comment again, but I'm just curious about, maybe what has the status of our seniors in our state and their economic sort of buying power for their retirement income, and has that declined substantially, which was the impression I got from this article with increasing number of seniors and qualifying for food stamps.
Ms. Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Loon. That article definitely caught my eye as well. But I think that really what that points to is a more targeted and focused approach to this question. I'm not sure it points to a need for a full exemption across all income levels, but I think the struggles that our seniors are facing is definitely real, and there's a number of ways to go about it. I think the scope of these bills go well beyond the concerns of the seniors that are struggling most.
Chair Lewis.
Thank you. And just one follow-up then. So, Ms. Madden, I understand the point of view you're bringing to this discussion, but would you say that there probably is some room here where there is a level of assistance that a good number of senior citizens in Minnesota may need, that this taxing of their benefits may be putting some of them in a difficult situation in terms of basic living expenses?
Ms. Madden?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, I think it does point to the fact that, a number of factors, a number of folks have alluded to the not particularly robust cost of living increases in Social Security and increases in expenses. Are creating problems that seniors face, and I think you can take a look at whether some targeted changes here on the Social Security exemption is the best way to get there. Is it looking at some of the other tax issues specifically related to seniors? For example, I believe there's a marriage penalty for seniors and people with disabilities in the property tax refund program. And then, you know, then there's things on the spending side as well. So I think there's a whole menu of things that you might want to look at to look at this concern. I think just the point we're trying to make is that it's not necessary to provide a full exemption across all income levels to address that particular problem.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you.
Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to comment, being that other pensions came into the discussion and how they might compare in terms of benefits. The example that was used was one of the members, I won't use names.
Thank you.
spouse passed away, what the limited benefits were. And that I wanted to point out there are some things, though, that you have to keep in mind when you're talking about other pensions that are important in that kind of a discussion. So, first of all, other pensions, if you're not going to be under Social Security, they have to be an approved plan. And that means they have to be at least as good as Social Security. They might be better, but they have to be at least as good as Social Security. If we were the Pension Commission, and I think we're kind of scooting into some of that area here with other plans, we would sometimes refer to that as a basic plan. Typically, when people under those plans retire, if one option that they have is the annuitant, as they would call them, they can take the pension for basically the rest of their life. And they get a higher payment. And if they pass away, pension ends. Now, some of the plans have a little criteria, you know, that you have to, if you haven't drawn at least 3 years or 5 years or something like that, then there might be a cash payment. But it ends. That's one of the options that these employees would have under an approved plan. Another is if you want to protect your spouse, then the amount that you receive is based on the life expectancy of you and your spouse. And you would receive a lower annuity because then you're going to be drawing less money to protect your spouse on into the future under those plans. So I don't want to get too heavily into all of that. That's what I say, we're getting into kind of maybe a discussion of the Pension Commission discussions, but those are options that people under an approved plan would have. But one of the reasons I wanted to respond is that the federal government has set out criteria for an approved plan. So it's not that the federal government doesn't intervene with those plans. You have to have met certain criteria. Otherwise, you would be, under the law, be paying into Social Security if you didn't meet that criteria. So I think those are some of the things that when we kind of go far here, we have to kind of keep in mind when we begin to compare Social Security benefits with the benefits under some of the other plans, because some things aren't exactly the same. But there are points of termination if depending on what plan you select. So I'll just stop there, and hopefully I didn't need a response because I didn't mention a name.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. It'd be my intention, we're going to have Representative Marquardt wrap it up, but before we go to the authors for some brief wrap-ups, is there any other questions for members, for any of the testifiers, anyone else? Then I'll go to Chair Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for bringing up this issue. And, you know, reducing taxes on Social Security for senior citizens is a bipartisan issue. Both Democrats and Republicans in the past have come up with proposals to do that. And like everyone else around the table here, I talk to a lot of senior citizens, and what I hear from them is a lot on property taxes. You know, if they can stay in their home, especially if one spouse has passed away, how they're going to even maintain the yard and those type of things. And the Social Security also comes up in those discussions. But I have never heard one senior citizen tell me they want to put a burden on future generations. And, you know, when we look at the cost of these bills, when fully phased in, about $560 million a year, over $1.1 billion in a biennium, $1.1 billion. Quite frankly, we know around this table we can't afford that. And so I think sometimes when we start talking about we're going to eliminate the Social Security tax, we do get expectations up that are not going to occur, because we know what's going to happen is that we're going to have a realistic budget target. And I think what we absolutely need to do is have a strategic targeted tax relief for senior citizens or veterans or farmers or working families or small businesses, because in reality, that's what's going to occur. And so I really hope that, and I know Representative Anzell's had a bill last year, Representative David's in your House File 4, it's this approach that was mentioned by the gentleman from AARP also, is look at this threshold where for a couple it's $32,000. And that hasn't moved, I think, for over 30 years with inflation. If you were to move that up to about, you know, $60,000, $70,000, that would be the targeted relief that we can afford without divesting in a lot of other areas. And so I'm hoping we can do something this year. I mean, on both sides of the aisle, that I know is a goal to try to, you know, get at reducing Social Security taxes on seniors. But we have to take a realistic approach here because, quite frankly, we can't afford it. With the November forecast, this biennium, if you take the structural difference, and that's revenues over expenditures, it's about $740 million. And into 20 and 21, it's about $1.3 billion. So those dollars go fast. And one thing that I feel good about is that the budget right now, the state budget here in Minnesota, is in as good a shape as it's ever been in the time that I've been here, and maybe Chair David's and former Chair Lincheski and others, in that we actually have structural surpluses, not surpluses based on one-time funding, but actual structural surpluses into the future with almost a $2 billion surplus. And so I think one of the top goals of the tax committee this year, while providing targeted strategic property tax relief and other types of relief, is to make sure we maintain a strong budget into the future. And, you know, when you phase in things, that always, there's a lot of unknowns there. And we know when this is fully phased, it's like $1.1 billion. So I like the approach that I see in House File 4, and I hope that's the way we go. And I think in the end, if we do something, that's the way it's going to go. Now, I want to add one final thing on migration studies, because I heard a lot of talk last meeting. Is Chair Davids, we maybe should just have a day when we talk about migration studies and bring them in, because, you know, I've got to file this stick. And the evidence is both ways, quite honestly. But I'm going to add one more anecdotal one that I hear around, and I think we have a few anecdotal ones that float. I'm going to put in the grandparent factor on migration. And I've got a 3.5-year-old granddaughter who lives 75 miles away from me. Her name is Addison. And when I see her and she is yelling, "Papa," as she runs to me to give a hug, that is priceless. And I don't know how much savings and taxes that would take for me to move to Florida to leave little Addison. And so the point I want to make here is that when we talk about how tax cuts and these single factors that tend to, you know, create this, all these people fleeing, there just is a lot more that we have to consider here. I mean, there's family, there's taxes, there's services, there's all of these things that we wrestle with as a tax committee and with a legislature here. So let's have a day on migration if we can, but we've got to be really careful. There are so many factors involved on why people want to move. So thank you for letting me kind of have the last word today. It wasn't anything earth-shattering. But, Mr. Chair, I hope we do something with Social Security, but I hope it's targeted and something that keeps our budget stable into the future.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members and testifiers. Great, robust discussion. Sitting here listening, I'm more and more convinced House File 9 is the way we need to go. We heard a lot of pros and cons, but we use Representative Anzell's name frequently here. And one of the things that caught my attention that occasionally he would throw out there is, you know, folks, we can admire this problem for a long time. Well,
we got to stop admiring and get something done. And so, again, I thank the committee and the testifiers for a lot of robust discussion, but I think we need to do something now, and we need to do it in a major manner. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Metzler renews his motion to move House File 9 for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Item next, Representative Lohmer. I will move House File 213. Representative Lohmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, and I agree. We had a great discussion this morning, and I'm very thankful that you were willing to hear these bills, and I do prefer Representative Lewick's bill because I really prefer us getting something done sooner than later. Like I said, I've been working on this issue since I was elected in 2010, and I will just reiterate my opening comments that, you know, we represent people in this job, and the number of people who contact me about this issue is staggering. I should show you my email inbox, and I think a lot of you have heard from your constituents as well. So I think it's time to do something about this, and I could really relate with you, Representative Marquardt. I have three grandchildren. They're 6, 4, and 6 months, and they're just the joy of my life, and I don't think people really want to leave their delightful, wonderful grandchildren, but sometimes they don't have a choice, and so I want to make sure that people can stay united as a family. So thank you again for your support on this bill.
Yeah, I will renew my motion that House File 123, excuse me, House File, let's get the numbers right, 213, be there for possible inclusion. Where I got my 123, here's tomorrow's agenda. We have two Nash bills, House File 123, 186, Rosenthal 214, Knobloch has two bills, 138 and 137. With that, anything else for the good of the order? Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to comment to Representative Marquardt. I spent a fair amount of time out in your area this fall, and what you need to know about migration is the wood ducks go first, teal second, divers, and then the greenheads finally show up.
On that note, members, good government all the time. We are adjourned.